Get a kick when you click at chapelboro.com. Chapelboro.com, more of what you live here for. And now, welcome to The Art of Potential with your host, Kristen Heemstra, on News Talk 1360 WCHL. Welcome to the Art of Potential show. We have a very special holiday show in store for you. For many people, the holidays is a sacred time, and we are going to explore how different belief systems embrace the holiday season. We are going to be hearing from Reverend Carl King of University United Methodist Church, Rabbi Jen Feldman of the Chapel Hill Kahila Synagogue, Reverend Wong Gong of the Wan Buddhist Temple, and psychic Sherry Dillard. So let's get started with Carl King. Welcome, Reverend King.
Thank you, Kristen. Good to be here.
So tell us where you're from and kind of what your background is so we know why you're an expert in this.
An expert. So I'm from Durham, grew up just across the line, so to speak, and have been here in ministry in Chapel Hill for the last 4.5 years, serving University United Methodist Church.
Well, we're very glad to have you here. So can you tell us about how Christmas is, kind of how it came to be and how it's celebrated by Christians?
Well, Christmas comes from the Latin of Christ Mass, really. And so it's a celebration of the Mass or the Feast of Christ, the Eucharist, a celebration of the birth of the Son of God. It's been celebrated for us, we would feel time immemorial, but really, it dates back to the early first centuries after Christ. Now, we don't celebrate Christmas the way our ancestors used to.
Oh, tell me about that. I didn't know that.
Well, frankly, the way we celebrate Christmas today really has more to do with Charles Dickens.
Just so interesting.
Well, and it's interesting, and we have him to thank in a way. Certainly merchants would thank him because it was in England with the publication of that book that Christmas was begun to be seen as a time of gift giving in a more capitalist way. And so all of the production that we have around Christmas in the marketplace is really only something we've seen in the last few centuries.
So if Scrooge hadn't have had like a vision of himself so that he decided to give a ham or a turkey to Tiny Tim's family or whatever, the merchants of today would not be doing the Christmas thing. Is that kind of what you're saying?
The merchants would not be making as much money.
Okay.
Now, the church is not beholden to Dickens for honoring Christmas, so we want to be careful to make that distinction. It's just the way that it is celebrated with the trees and with the gift, the ton of gift giving, and all is really a sort of a modern development, if you will. But for the Christian significance, the church has always marked the Christian observance, the celebration of the celebration of the birth of Christ.
Okay, so what? Tell me how Advent, like, what is Advent, and how does that connect to Christmas? Are they one and the same?
I'm so glad you even know what Advent is, that you know Advent exists. Advent is the beginning of the church year. So the secular calendar obviously begins January 1st, but in the Christian calendar, the Christian year begins on the first Sunday of Advent, which is 4 Sundays before Christmas. Those 4 Sundays, those 40 days leading up to Christmas are a time of preparation for the birth of Christ, just as during Lent we prepare to celebrate Easter. So the holy seasons in the Christian church are Advent and Christmas and Lent and Easter. And Advent then is the time of preparation, the time of waiting. The scriptures that are read on Sundays in Advent focus on John the Baptist, not on Jesus. And we listen to John the Baptist as the herald of the one who will bring good news. The Christian season, popularly, we lead up and Christmas begins to be celebrated. I think I saw the first Christmas decorations 2 weeks before Halloween this year.
Oh, wow.
So
wow, that is impressive. I was going to say after Halloween, but you got, yeah, you're
these
early.
Are 2 weeks before okay. Halloween. Again, the merchants can really thank Charles Dickens for that. But for the Christian church, Christmas is not only one day. Popularly, we anticipate Christmas from the evening of Halloween on. Mm-hmm. But in the Christian church, we anticipate Christmas through the season of Advent. And then the 12 days of Christmas begin. Christmas is not a day.
I didn't know that. I thought that was just a song.
Right. Well, in fact, in the Christian church, the Christmas season is 12 mm-hmm. days after Christmas. It starts on Christmas Day. So the 12 days of Christmas truly are 12 days of Christmas.
I had no idea.
Similarly, you know, in Hanukkah, you have gifts throughout all the time. In fact, children in Christian families might wish that we remembered more of our Jewish heritage, because they might get a gift every day of the Christmas season instead of just one morning.
So I just want to go back to Advent because, okay, so we're preparing for the heralding of the Christ child coming in the Presbyterian church, and forgive me because I don't know much about the Methodist tradition, but we light a candle for each Sunday, mm-hmm. and they all have different meanings. Do you all do that?
Yes. Okay. And that's I think, a pretty common Protestant practice,
okay.
Perhaps Catholic as well. I'm afraid I don't know for sure, but the Advent wreath marks the Sundays of Advent, and each candle represents something different: hope, joy, peace, love. And then the fifth candle is the Christ candle that's lit on Christmas Eve or on Christmas Day.
So it's almost like you're trying to usher in hope, joy, peace, and love, and then you're kind of capping it off with the final birth of Christ, would you say?
Yes, and in a very real-world, realistic way, because I think the Christian faith teaches that hope, joy, peace, these are not things that simply come to us all of a sudden, but these are things that require preparation, require work, involve a lot of waiting. So Advent is not a season to rush through. So it's a real shame that popularly there's this celebration of Christmas that begins before Halloween even. The religious underpinnings are ones that are really lay a foundation for a world that is hopeful, joyful, peaceful, all those things that we believe Christ did bring. And then when Christmas morning comes, we can celebrate a season, not just a day, mm-hmm. of the gift of these things.
What a wonderful way to approach the holidays. Well, thank you very much for being here with us and explaining it to us. I feel like I've learned a lot, and I'll be honest, my dad's a Presbyterian minister, so these are all things I should kind of know. But anyway, thank you very much, Reverend King.
Well, thank you, Kristen. It's a joy.
We will be right back on the Art of Potential show, and our next guest is Rabbi Jen Feldman of the Kehillah Synagogue.
That mourns in lonely air.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of What You Live Here For. And now, back to The Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
So now let's hear from Rabbi Jen Feldman. So Rabbi Feldman, welcome. And can you tell us a little bit about where you serve?
Thank you so much. I serve the Kehillah Synagogue here in Chapel Hill.
Wonderful. And what we want to talk about is Hanukkah, because I know nothing about Hanukkah and how it came to be. And my memories, unfortunately, are from Saturday Night Live, and there was Hanukkah Harry, and that's like...
Yeah.
So tell me about Hanukkah.
Hanukkah is an eight-day festival celebrating the rededicating of the Second Temple in Jerusalem during the Maccabean Revolt in the second century before the Common Era. It has been given many interpretations through the ages. One of them is the victory of the few against the many. The Maccabees were faced with having to defeat the great army under Antiochus IV. Antiochus had taken over the temple and had desecrated the temple, and the small group of rebels led by Judah Maccabee came and were able to reclaim the temple and cleanse it and rededicate it. Later, the rabbis interpreted the miracle of Hanukkah as being the miracle of the oil, that when the Maccabees came to rededicate the temple, they found just one cruse of oil, and that one cruse of oil miraculously lasted for 8 days when they relit the menorah, and that 8-day period allowed them to create more oil for the continuing to light the menorah. It was supposed to be continually lit. Also, there are other interpretations of the miracle of Hanukkah. One is that one cruse of oil, there was a miracle that it actually remained unspoiled, that somehow, amidst all of the desecration and destruction, that one cruse of oil remained unspoiled. And that comes to represent the part of our souls that is never destroyed. Mm-hmm. It is the inner point of light mm-hmm. where we have an imminent sense of God dwelling within us, and that we can always find that place, and there's a part of us that never is destroyed.
Never spoiled by no matter what we do or what we're around. Okay.
Yeah. Another interpretation as well is that the miracle of Hanukkah is not actually that one cruse of oil lasted 8 days, but rather that those who found it, knowing that it was not really enough, still had the courage to take that step and go ahead and light.
Ah.
So it's the capacity when you're faced in the darkest of situations to still step forward with faith and hope. And that's an interpretation of Hanukkah, I think, that that very much speaks to me.
Okay, so in terms of the Hanukkah story, how many versions are there?
Well, there are different sources. So one is in the Book of Maccabees, which is part of the apocryphal literature. And there are also in the writings of Josephus, there's an account of the Maccabean revolt. And then we have the writings in the Talmud, which speak about the miracle of the oil, which then the Talmud is a Jewish text from around, edited and kind of coming into its final form around the year 500 of the Common Era.
Wow. Okay. So,
and they speak of different things.
Yeah. No, that's kind of interesting because I know, like, in accounts. The my frame of reference is biblical, just because that's the tradition I was brought up in. So there's some parallels, interestingly enough.
Well, so it's not a biblical holiday, and as such, Hanukkah is not a major festival in the Jewish tradition. This is a minor festival. It is of rabbinic, not biblical origin, and. So the ways it's celebrated are the lighting of a Chanukiah or a menorah each night, with increasing the number of candles as the holiday progresses. And traditionally, you didn't exchange gifts.
Mm-hmm.
You played dreidel. You'd eat traditionally foods fried in oil, either latkes or fried donuts. But it's really a result of being, as Judaism develops in America, with its close proximity to other winter holidays, that gift-giving has kind of gotten attached to Hanukkah.
Infused into it.
Right.
So if we were to go to Israel, there wouldn't be gifts being exchanged.
Not at the same level as in this country.
How very interesting. Mm-hmm. So it does get elevated in a sense just because, you know.
By proximity to the calendar. And, you know, our traditions are always influencing
each other,
and it's kind of an outgrowth of the development of Judaism in this country.
So when someone is practicing or thinking about Hanukkah during this time of year, it sounds to me like this is really a holiday of courage to take the next step forward, or to maybe even confront some things that feel bigger than you at that moment in your life that you may need to, you know, you might need to have some resolution around.
You know, I would say, as an overall theme, the theme of light amidst darkness, of searching out light amidst darkness, and I think that that can have very different resonances at different times in our lives. But the capacity to find light amidst darkness. The mitzvot, the commandments associated with Hanukkah, the primary one is Pirsum et HaNes, is the announcing of the miracle. So in Israel, the Hanukkah is lit and it's placed outside in the doorway
mm-hmm.
so that everyone can see it.
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S., oftentimes you'll find people placing it in the window. So there's a sense of shining it to announce the miracle, but also the capacity to shine light outwards.
Which is really interesting because one of the traditional holiday things I think of is a light in the window.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
so many people have that light in a
mm-hmm.
window.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like that might have come out of the Jewish tradition, or I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe that's
something. Yeah. I don't think that there's necessarily a linkage there,
mm-hmm.
but there is a sense of that announcing the miracle of shining light forward. Another mm-hmm. aspect of the lighting of the menorah or the Chanukiah is that there's a helper candle called the Shamash. So there are eight days of Hanukkah. There are eight places on the menorah for placing mm-hmm. candles. And there's a ninth place for the candle that lights all others. And so there's this message. You could imagine that you might take the candle that's lit on the first night and use that to light the second.
Right.
Why do we need an extra candle? And there is an understanding that this is how light is shared, right? That individual souls can reach out and offer light to another soul. And that's just as that Shamash candle takes its light and spreads it through connection.
That's beautiful.
So there are also ways of understanding the need for that Shamash candle and what it can represent to us.
The symbol of it. Well, that is wonderful. Well, I just want to thank you so much for being here.
It's been my pleasure.
Sharing about your tradition. I have learned quite a bit, and I think our listeners probably have as well.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Art of Potential show. And coming up, we have an interview with Reverend Wong Gong of the Wong Buddhist Temple and Psychic Sherry Dillon. We'll be right back.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to the Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
So now we're going to hear from Reverend Wong Gong of the Wong Buddhist Temple in Chapel Hill. Welcome, Reverend Wong Gong.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
And what we would like to know from you is a little bit about how your faith thinks about the holidays.
Holiday was nice, happy spirit, like everybody. But the holiday, especially around December, it's a little bit having different approach for us, in a sense, as a time to reflect and close the year.
Ooh, okay.
And also, we do not celebrate around Christmas, but we also feel the joyful spirit, honoring that biggest celebration day of different faiths. We have a special event each year called New Year Eve Ceremony, and as a special candlelight ceremony to reflect upon whole year, past year, and meditate in a meditative way so that we can prepare a clear new brand another year.
Okay, so can you tell me a little bit about what meditation means? Because I think that word means so many different things to so many different people of faith. So what does it mean when you talk about meditation?
Well, meditation can be defined in many different ways, as you just said, depending on individuals, depending on where you are seeking for. In general, meditation is a way to calm your mind, and at the same time your body becomes calmer, so that we can bring full potential of a clear awareness and also the calm, clear spirit.
Okay, so to calm, can you walk me through the process to calm your mind? Like, I'm thinking you sit there and then you're breathing and you're trying to clear your mind, but inevitably, if it's me or people I know, you start thinking about the groceries that you have to get or the things that you have to do, and your world kind of infuses itself into that moment when you're trying to be silent. Do you have any advice for people who are really trying to develop this clear awareness?
Well, that's such a good question, because that's the highest level of meditation. We call it timeless meditation and placeless meditation. So meditating of feeling of mind, not only when you are sitting on meditation cushion, but off the cushion, when we are engaged in with myriads of things in your daily activities. So can I stay still clear, alert, but calm state of mind when I'm shopping, when I'm talking, when I'm driving, you know, etc. So by sitting or doing some meditation activities, or by learning some meditation techniques, eventually we want to take that meditative state of mind or the benefit of meditation to our daily life. So you can actually have a seamless practice, if it makes sense to you.
So that you're basically living then in a constant state of meditation. Is that...
You're not like a kind of a... that does not mean you have to be quiet.
Right.
You know, you still talk, you still laugh loud, but you have clear understanding and awareness what's going on, and you are not really biased by your upset feeling or your prejudice or non-clear mind, because you do all activity, but you maintain very clear egoless state of mind, so you can have a clear, better, faster, right judgment, also mindful choice and action.
Okay, so you're basically clearing your mind of all the clutter and really kind of getting into more of the essence of who you are in terms of your decision making and things like that, because you don't have all the clutter there to cloud your judgments. You've kind of meditated to a deeper place within yourself. Is that what you're saying?
That sounds right. That sounds good. And also, it's a very hard level, actually, if we can maintain the level all the time, especially when you are dealing with a very busy moment, a lot of daily hassles.
Yeah, I can understand why it would take a very high level of practice in order to go out into South Point Mall and walk around and, you know, not be overwhelmed by all the life right there in front of you happening.
Yeah, because sometimes we can be really distracted by all the greedy mind or some craving mind or something that you do not necessarily have to buy.
Okay. So part of the meditation then sounds like there is a little bit of self-control infused in it, or that you're trying to curb your own outer desires, if you will.
Sure. Yes.
So then, okay, so your big celebration is the New Year's Eve candlelight ceremony. In that time when you're having your celebration, are you kind of thanking for the old year? Are you planning for the new year? Is it a combination of both?
Yes, basically sending off the year, old year, together, whoever can come, by reflecting whole year together, and, reflecting something that, you are grateful for, reflecting something that you feel regretful.
Were you saying you reflect on something you feel grateful for as well as something you feel regretful for?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so you have both of those.
Yes. So, and then also something that you feel proud of yourself, you feel good about yourself.
Okay.
Or you feel that you want to continue on some good qualities that you cultivated in the past. So reflect on something, all those good qualities that you want to carry on to the next year.
Okay.
At the same time, also meditating or reflecting on, you know, some of the pains and regrets, all the hurts. So kind of practicing of emptiness, reflecting on the empty nature, so we do not have to carry all those, you know, difficult times or challenges, which was embedded in our mind.
So when you say the practice of emptiness and you're doing this reflection, is it almost like you're emptying out to create space for new things for the new year, like you're emptying out your regrets by reflecting on them?
Yes, because the biggest philosophy teaching in Buddhism is the art of emptiness, because our mind can be so mysterious, mm-hmm. constantly changeable,
mm-hmm.
So never the same every second. But sometimes our mind easily can be fixated with something happened in the past. So we keep rechewing over and over, mm-hmm. and create another unnecessary agony based mm-hmm. upon the past.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the whole idea. So we reflect upon that truth. The mind or everything's constantly changing. And so we don't have to, you know, drag our energy up to the something that is not real anymore.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So what's in the past is gone, so we can let it go and pull the energy that was there to use for creating a new experience in the new year.
Exactly.
How wonderful.
You have been listening to the Art of Potential show with Kristen Heemstra. Stay tuned. We are going to talk with Sherry Dillard, a psychic, about the meaning of the holidays, as well as to hear from people around the area about what their Christmas traditions mean to them.
Visit chapelboro.com for more of what you live here for. And now, back to the Art of Potential with Kristen Heemstra on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Sherry Dillard is the author of two best-selling books. One is called Discover Your Psychic Type, and the other is called Love and Intuition. She is going to be sharing with us the spiritual interpretation of Christmas. Welcome, Sherry.
Hi, Kristen. Thank you so much.
Well, we're so glad to have you here. So I'd be really curious about the spiritual interpretation of Christmas from your perspective.
Okay. Well, from a metaphysical point of view, the story of Christmas is a pattern for all of us for the experience of rebirth and renewal within ourselves, primarily with the divine Christ consciousness.
Okay, so what's a Christ? Is the Christ consciousness different than Jesus?
Yeah, the Christ consciousness is not so, it certainly is. Jesus was the pattern and the kind of beholder of the Christ consciousness, and he still is. Christ consciousness is for all of us, though. It's the awareness that Jesus brought to us of our own connection to the divine source. And Christmas, the pattern of Christmas, helps each one of us come into that awareness. If I was to interpret the specific events of the Christmas story, for instance, from a metaphysical point of view, we could say that the star, following the star, the wise men following the star, is that part of us, that wise part of us, that is willing to go into the darkness, willing to go within, willing to go and to feel and find that light within ourselves. The inn that Mary and Joseph come to represents the intellect. It's the part of us that is the mind, the thinking part of us, the part that we present to the world. In the Christmas story, the inn was closed. There was no room, and so they went into the barn, into the manger. And what that's telling us metaphysically is that to go within, within our own heart, the manger represents the heart. And Jesus, the birth, the Christ consciousness, the birth within us, is not going to be discovered through reasoning.
Through the mind, yeah.
It's going to be birthed to us, more or less, through the heart. And Mary represents the divine feminine. Mary represents that part of us that is intuitive, because the divine feminine is more of an intuitive energy. And intuition is a Latin word. It's derived from a Latin word, which means contemplating within. Psychic is actually, the true definition, is pertaining to the soul within. And so in the correct form of intuition and psychic, it actually is pointing us within self. And using our ability to tune within, contemplate within, listen within, and intuition really simply is that. It's really simply listening within without the intellect. And in order to birth this part of us, to be renewed, to discover the divine consciousness within us, we have to use our intuition. We're not going to find it through thinking about it or discussing it or through logic. It's that going within.
Where does Joseph fit into this?
Well, Joseph actually represents that male energy within us also. He represents that part of us that, you know, if we were to look at the energies within us, both the male and the female or the feminine would represent more of that intuitive awareness, the heart. The male represents in its really most compatible form with the feminine. It represents the protection, the ability to carry this out. In other words, we all need a little bit of male energy in us in order to actually pursue this inner light. Because it's not always easy. It's not always easy to go a different way. You know, even in the Christmas, how we experience it now, it's easy to go along with the way we have been kind of culturally raised to celebrate Christmas. And so to take a different route actually requires more male energy, because male energy tends to be more assertive and more protective of the feminine.
And maybe more courageous. And it's
right, exactly. Right, yeah.
So what do the gifts of the wise men represent then?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the different, you know, gold representing the material that we kind of, that the divine is expressed through in the world, the material world.
Okay.
Frankincense, I believe, has more to do with essence, with energy. And what was the third gift?
Myrrh.
Yeah. I think, again, that has to do with, I'm not sure exactly about that, fragrance in some form, but I do know my personal interpretation of the gift is that when we birth that part of us, when we birth that divine pure energy within us, that Christ consciousness, that source from within, my interpretation of it is that the gifts represent the gifts that we bring into the world through that divine within us. You know, so many people, we have innate abilities. We don't know where they come from. We don't know why. Some people, everybody has gifts. Everyone has a gift. And the gift is different from something that we've just learned. I mean, we can certainly learn about it and take classes or increase our abilities, but our gifts come from our pure source, which is that divine energy within us. And that's really what the renewal is about. It's not just about the feeling, which is, of course, the feeling is important. It's also about what we now bring into the world. What are we contributing? What are we giving to others? What are we expressing in the world that others need? And when we find that, when we discover that, that's when, you know, all of us are truly happy, is when we find our purpose.
Well, I have to tell you, this is a very interesting take on the Christmas story, and one I would not have thought of myself. I would have gone in a lot of different directions, but I hear what you're saying, and I can see a lot of truth into it. And I think about the wisdom of the wise men showing up with the gifts. It's kind of like your gifts come through your wisdom in a way.
Right.
You know. Well, thank you very much for this insight. And we appreciate you being on the show.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And now we have a very special surprise, because no holiday season is complete without the big guy himself. Please welcome Santa Claus. Yes, hello, Santa Claus. This is Kristen Heemstra from the Art of Potential show. How are you today?
Oh, doing fine, Kristen. How's it going?
Well, it is going great. We are very excited to have you on the show. So how's the weather in the North Pole?
Oh, balmy, balmy.
Is it getting a little warmer than it has been in the years?
A little bit. We're appreciating the opportunity to wear Bermuda shorts up here.
Oh, wow. It sounds like it's a lot warmer. So do you have all the reindeer ready?
Oh, absolutely. We've got the whole bunch of them. We've actually got backups this year because we like to switch them out halfway through the world so that they each do about half an evening and then get to take a break.
Well, do you think there'll be any new Christmas songs with these new reindeer names?
Oh, absolutely. we've got, let's see, Login and Weblog. they're mostly tech related.
It sounds like it. So let me ask you this. Are any of the toys you're making this year technology based, or are those your most popular?
Absolutely. We're trying out a new thing, the Kindle Fireplace, a Santa exclusive. You can download the latest chapter in my ongoing autobiography. It's been 300 volumes so far, and we're looking forward to the 301st.
Wow. I will definitely have to put an order in for that. All right, Santa, so Art of Potential has a history of being a career-related show. I'm just curious, how did you get into this particular career?
Oh, I don't think of it as a career. I think of it less as a vocation and more an avocation. When I was younger, that was many, many, many years ago, I started getting into just sort of fiddling around in the workshop, and eventually I started finding a group of elves of similar interests, and we just started making toys just because it was what we liked to do.
So you were following your passion.
Yes, yes. Just sort of an entrepreneurial path that just opened itself up to us.
Well, okay, so the show we're doing right now is one where we're talking about people's different faiths and orientation to the holidays. And I know from the experience in my house, anyway, that you have brought a great deal of joy into the world.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Kristen. My take on the holidays is that everybody gets stressed out with the shopping that they're doing or trying to finish up that last-minute project before they have to run out for 2 weeks with the in-laws. And my thing is, you should really just take a minute to appreciate how the year is ending. Just make yourself feel at home with the family and the friends that you've got hanging around you, and give a warm welcome to the folks around the office before you head out for the holidays.
Well, that sounds like excellent advice. Here's a question I have for you that some of our listeners may have too. So if we want you to come to our house, it's my understanding we need to be nice. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, so Where exactly is the line between naughty and nice?
It's actually a sliding scale based on a lot of factors. We actually have a very complicated actuarial spreadsheet laid out to figure out exactly what determines naughty and nice based on your life experience as well as extenuating factors, including excuses, number of siblings with which you have rivalry, etc.
Wow. And here I thought it might be so easy as to think, you know, it's doing the right thing when you know what's right or know what's wrong.
Oh, well, there's no clear line in there, but eventually after I've checked it once, I have a pretty good idea, and then that second checking just does it every single time.
Well, Santa, I would like to say thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Oh, no problem.
Any message you would like to give to our listeners?
Absolutely. Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
From all of us at the Art of Potential Show, we wish you a very happy and healthy holiday.